Greetings from Podcastville. It's Wednesday, March 27th. This podcast is brought to you by CBD Lion. Picking a reliable CBD company was like pulling fucking teeth. No more. They got 80 brands on there. But lucky for you motherfuckers, I found CBD Lion. If you go to CBDLion.com and check out their third-party lab results, you're going to be fucking amazed. And right now, the Church family gets 20% off at checkout when you put in CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H, at checkout. That's CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H. CBD Lion, the reliable CBD company. Also, let me ask you something. You're starting to lose your hair a little bit. Maybe sometimes you go on a date and things, the plumbing ain't working like it, usual. Let me tell you, I got something for you. Company called Hims. It's a wellness brand for men. You've heard us talk about it for years now, but let me explain something to you. 66% of men start to lose their hair by the age of 35. And once you notice you got thinning hair, it's too late. Is that hairline slowly starting to move backwards? Any bald spots yet? I got the solution. 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness, if you know what I'm talking about. Listen, you got no snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescriptions, solutions backed by science. That's what I'm talking about. So what I'm going to do is get the church started, the church family started, with Hims Complete Hair Kit for $5 today while supplies last, subject to doctor's approval, and restrictions apply. See the website for full detail. This could cost you hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy or some other guy from the street. No. At 4hims.com, we got you covered. So go to 4hims.com/Joey. That's 4hims.com/Joey and see how Hims can help you. The podcast is also brought to you by, listen, ZipRecruiter. You know how challenging it is to hire the right candidate for the right job? It takes a long time, too many applicants, and now ZipRecruiter makes it easy. Hiring is challenging. What are you going to do? ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans through thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience to invite them to apply for your job. Who else does that? ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates. So stop messing around. Whether you got a small business or a large corporation or whatever you got, ZipRecruiter is the way to go. And right now, the church listeners can get ZipRecruiter for free, F-R-E-E, gratis. No BS, at this exclusive address. You ready? Grab a pen. ZipRecruiter.com/church. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/church. C-H-U-R-C-H, ZipRecruiter.com/church. Kick this motherfucking mule, Lee. Are you fucking kidding me, Mike Tyson?
What's going on,
man? How hard does this hit?
Oh, it's hitting hard, man.
This is 80-something, just...
I need to come out to my fights in this song.
Yeah, this makes you want to stab 10 motherfuckers.
Yeah, fight the power of the radical of the youngster.
Oh, my God. Mike, you did something that happens in Hollywood, but it happened to you. You were like the fucking king at the age of 20. How hard was... I mean, you didn't even know what the fuck was going on around you.
No, you're absolutely right.
That's true. At 20, things are moving so fast.
Hey, well, he never thought about that. It's me and this old Italian fellow. We got together, and he has told me these wonderful things about myself and what I could accomplish if I listened to him. And so I dedicated my life in listening to him.
Now, did he take you to a hypnotist?
Yeah, he was a hypnotist too, but he also took me to one.
He was a hypnotist?
Yeah.
In which way?
Yesterday, where he could allow you to relax and he could reach your subconsciousness.
With the tone of his voice?
Yeah.
And just talk to you nice and light.
Yeah.
Tell you what was going on. You're the champion.
Try to fall asleep, yeah.
Yeah, no. Cuss was a weird breed, bro.
Yeah, he was.
I never met him, but God rest his soul.
A weird breed. But he knew what he wanted in life. He wanted champions.
You know, Mike, I want to write a book. I've been writing a book. But in that book, in between chapters, I want to write about the people who touched my life. In the weirdest, how many motherfuckers came in and out of your life that you think about every 3 days and go, God, and they're not dead. I'm not even talking about that. They could still be alive. you're just in a different mind game. You didn't talk to them no more.
Yeah, that's
you're
true.
Not talking to them no more because the
most of mine are dead. Yeah. But yeah, there's a few.
No, like motherfuckers.
My life has just changed.
How many motherfuckers came up to you one day, didn't want none from you, and just said something to you that you went back to your room and had to think about what the fuck this happened, and you look back and they disappear, and you think that maybe could be an angel from God that just. I had 20 motherfuckers that have come into my life at the weirdest times. Then they disappeared. I want to write like a page just in between chapters. How many motherfuckers do you have that really affected you in the weirdest ways?
You know, when you say a lot of people in my life that affect me in that particular way, they usually passed away and stuff. And I was watching... a documentary about Joan Rivers. Yeah. She's the blonde.
The crazy lady.
Yeah. And she had said somebody had left her. She lost contact with one of her workers. And she said, God, he was there. And, you know, what happened to those people that were there? Remember when this happened? They're not there no more.
It's weird. I'm not even talking. Like, I got a guy that lives in Pismo Beach. And one day he was my sales manager at a car place, and he was trying to egg me on. I think it's time for you to do comedy. I'm like, stop it, dog. Ain't no fucking comedian. I'm a criminal car salesman. I barely keep it together.
Nah, you're good, man.
I didn't know this at this time. I didn't know this. And one day I sold the car that night late, and they were washing it the next morning. And the kid's son, I went back to the check on him. I go, is this car going to be ready by 9? And the kid's son looked at me and goes, funny, we were talking about you this morning at breakfast. He goes, my dad said if he had any balls, he'd quit his job, get in the car, and take you on the road to do comedy. That shit fucked my insides up. Like,
yeah.
Like, till this day, I check in with him once every 2 months. He's about 70. He's the one that taught me how to write my goals. He used to say, a lot of people go, you know, like, they'll write down, I want to be world champion. Well, how are you going to become world champion? Write down the things you need to do to become world champion. I got to train. I can't drink. I got to stay away from these people. And he would make you write weekly goals, daily goals. Like when you went in there and every day, he wouldn't let you talk to a customer until you write down your goals for the week. I'm going to sell 2 cars today. I'm going to call 10 people on the phone. I'm going to talk to 8 people face to face. I'm going to have a good attitude. You got to hand it to him. He ain't dead, but I never forgot that lesson. He came into my life.
You ever talk to him?
Yeah. Okay, we still talk. I talk to the kids online. The one kid shares a birthday with me, so I wished him happy birthday. Sure, I don't forget nobody, Mike, that came into my life like an angel. My prison counselor, redneck motherfucking Mike. Mike, the first day I sat down, like I went into his, you know when you just get off the bus when you go to prison and they unshackle you? And they give you the fucking towel and your sheets. And then you go to the room and some motherfucker comes in and says, Tyson, counsel wants to see you in room 4. And you got to go in there. And before you even sit down, Mike, before I even sat down, he goes, oh, before you sit down, I want to tell you something. I don't like spicks, niggas, and Jews. So I don't like you already. Mike, that was how the conversation opened.
Man,
I'm going in there with personality, like
fuck that, nigga. They said, "Fuck that."
No, he said to me, "Did you ever get sit down?" No, he goes, "Don't even sit down. I don't like these type of minorities. I'm not crazy about Chinese people." Like he was a redneck with a military head, dude.
I'm not crazy.
And he goes, "I read over your report. You got here by a skin of your fucking mother's cunt." And then he goes, you're dismissed. And before I hit the door, he goes, you ever get hepatitis C or something? It was either hepatitis or some other disease. I go, no. He goes, report to the kitchen. You got a job. Get the fuck out of my sight. So for weeks, I didn't like him, Mike. You know, how can I like a guy that opens up like that? I don't like spics. Sure. Who the fuck are you? Nobody's ever said that shit to me. But somehow or another, he got impressed with me. You know, I did what I was supposed to do. And there was these psychological evaluations. You know, when we first got locked up, before they sent us to our destination, they do that week where they ask you stupid questions, they draw blood, they ask you to fucking fill the circles with the blocks. Did you have to do that?
Yeah.
A whole week.
And then you say, what does this look like? They say, what does this look like? What does this look like?
Yes. Well, at the end of
I've been doing it all my life.
Yeah. Well, I only had that evaluation once.
Because, like, that's, I watched the your Spike Lee documentary. It blew my mind how similar you two were, but it said you were arrested 38 times by the time you were 13. Like, do they even do diagnostics anymore after like 30 times?
No, they always didn't give you thorazine. And what's that they give you? Thorazine?
Lithium.
Lithium, yeah, they give you
they
lithium.
They put you on the lithium shuffle.
Oh, man, I've been on so many medications as a kid. And,
really? Yeah. They drug you into
psych ward? Yeah, listen, when we were kids, when Mike and I were kids, there was two drugs. There was lithium and thorazine. And then there was a heavy one that gave you, and they used to call it the lithium shuffle. As soon as you go to prison, they give you thorazine to calm you down.
Especially if you're a dangerous guy.
And you have to take it?
Yeah. And then what you do is you double up on them. Like, I would put them under my tongue and save them until I got three of them. And then I'd eat them all at once and get fucked up for like 15 hours.
Sometimes you can sell them, so that's why they always
sell them
to other inmates.
They always make sure, like, they're under your tongue and shit like that. It's a complete. So you do that diagnostic. And at the end of that diagnostic report, they make an assessment, and that assessment goes to the fucking FBI and every other federal bureau. This is their assessment. And I got to tell you, I believe it's an 87% assessment, because it was big amongst the prisoners. They would say, did you get your report yet? And you had to file a petition to a lawyer to actually get it.
Yeah, mine said I was like a fucking retard and shit.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
No,
man,
it didn't.
I'm serious, Joe, man. I think they have a fucking retard.
He told me I was a retard, but...
No, they think we bullshit, Joe, man.
They don't want you to know the result. They didn't really want you to know. So once I got under his skin, once he became my buddy, kind of, sort of, even though I know he hated minorities, I would go up to him when I was walking and go, Blue. His name was Mr. Blue. I go, Blue. Blue, when are you going to give me the diagnostic report? He's like, get the fuck out of here, Spick boy. Like, he would say shit like that with a giggle. And I was already used to that from Jersey, Mr. Otino. So he couldn't bother. When I was a kid, there was a dude on my corner, and he used to say shit to me every day. And I loved him to death because he toughened me up. He, you know, they knew I did Santeria. So every time I walked up the corner, he'd go, hey, what are you and your mother gonna invite some black people over and jump up and down and kill chickens today and shit? I mean, he would say shit to the Irish. He would say shit to the Jews. Everybody, he made a comment from his fucking balcony. So I made this guy out to be like Mr. Otino. And finally, like a month before I got out, I went up to him like, hey, Mr. Blue, tell me what it said on that thing. And he's like, you don't want to know. Like, you got to tell me what it says on there. And he got pissed, and he walked me into his office. He threw his fucking file on the table. And he goes, it says in there, if I had something you wanted, you would take it from me. That's what it says, that you're a fucking thief. Is that what you wanted to know? And Mike, I broke. Mike, I'd rather have you punch me in the stomach 80 times than the feeling I had at that moment. Because at 25 years old, I was told that I was going to not to amount to anything else but a fucking common thief. That's devastating. And he told me this 4 days before Christmas. Like, it ruined my fucking Christmas. But at least I came to terms with it. I go, if I'm going to be a thief, I'm going to be the best fucking thief there is when I get out of here. I'm going to rob three fucking...
I was a thief when I was a kid, too.
Yeah.
And then I got in trouble and stuff. And I always had, you know... Coming from places like Brooklyn, people want you to... It makes you feel real bad about yourself because it feels like you're a predator, and everybody outside of Brooklyn is prey, and you're looked at funny. You know, watch out for him. He's going to try to rob you. He's going to break in your house. Keep your doors closed. And we had that reputation. Brooklyn always had a bad reputation.
You know, before the podcast, we were talking about how there was a time in 1984 where I became a fucking animal. And I became such an animal, I would keep it from my friends. Like, the kids I grew up with, I would keep it from my friends. You know, I was working in Manhattan at the Sheridan Center on 52nd and 7th. And I got out at 1 in the morning. Do you know what that's like for a 22, 21-year-old kid with $200 in his pocket and a half gram of blow just to get the party started?
That's beautiful.
And, oh, no, it's beautiful. I was the king of New York. But I did shit those nights that, you know, for that went on for like 18 months of nights. I still remember being at a fucking party, Mike. Like they invited us after a club, like the rooftop. You remember the rooftop?
Very well.
You went in there after 11 and it was $17 all you could drink. And after 3, it was $14 all you could drink. And we went home with Paul Newman's daughter.
Like, what was that like?
Not the fucker. We all went back.
Partying?
Yeah, like it was like a party. She had like an apartment that had different floors. And on every floor, there were people snorting coke. You were talking to people. And I ended up in a bedroom with a friend of mine and this girl that I went to high school with. Both of them. All three of us had grown up together. And we're snorting coke. And we got there on a Tuesday. Now it's Wednesday. And now it's Thursday morning. We're still up.
Isn't that funny? That cocaine makes time fly, right?
Fly.
It makes it fly. Like,
nobody's eating, coke, drinking.
Everybody's still up. Nobody thinking about fucking your dick's fucked up.
Your dick's fucked up. But every time you pee, you get a toilet paper and you wash your dick.
Yeah.
Just in case somebody decides to suck it. You don't want it to smell like pee and helmet glue. You know what I'm saying?
Man, I can remember the day you fucked
up. Oh, just being fucked up. And I wanted to fuck this girl, but she was our friend. I knew she was a dirty whore, but our friendship was bigger than us, me trying to fuck her on the coke. But one night, this morning, it was like 11 in the morning, my buddies, we were there so long, they towed my buddy's car. That's how you know you're somewhere too long. So it was Thursday morning. And we're in the thing, and all of a sudden, we're looking for a lighter. And Lube's going, look in the drawer. And Regina opens the drawer, and there's a fucking ounce of fucking coke, like in a bag.
It's like heaven is
and I look
opened
at,
up.
And
right?
I look
like
at
heaven
her.
Heaven opened up and say, what?
I look fuck? At Regina, and I go, Regina, take some, and we'll get the fuck out of here. She's like, take some? I'm taking it all. She put in her purse. We walked out of there. We had no cash to get back to Jersey. Lube's went upstairs and borrowed money to get his car untowed. This is when the 80s. This is when New York was fucking crazy. Oh, this had to be, 85. Where were you in 85?
85, establishing, just turned professional fighter. Fighting. 18 years old, just started fighting.
Were you smoking reefer then or anything?
I smoked a little reefer, but I stopped when I started fighting.
Well, in the Olympics, they would test you.
Yeah.
So you couldn't smoke over there.
Yeah.
When did you start smoking weed?
Like around 97. That's 98, 97, I started smoking back.
And it calms you down?
Hey, I wish I was smoking it. I only smoked it once when I was fighting. I had an awesome fight. I fucked the guy. I broke his cheekbone, the eye socket, his jaw, his back. Man, fucking, man, I fucked him up his ribs. I was on the gym. I
you fucked somebody stoned?
Yeah, but they fined me $300,000.
Oh, they tested you afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, so they really look at marijuana as an enhancement drug in the
ring. Yeah, I believe so. I believe they still.
That is fucking crazy. But I'll tell you what, the best thing I ever did growing up was shooting hoops. And there was nothing like shooting hoops when you're stoned to the fucking gills. To play basketball.
It's not like training, boxing, sparring in gym when you
yes. Box. No, no. Ooh. No sparring. Yeah. I'll do bag work. I'll jump rope. Working, I'll do kettlebells. I'll lift. Punches getting thrown at me when I'm stoned.
Off the
fuck you. Stone. And jujitsu, I never even think about getting high before I go to jujitsu.
It's my best sparring session. I'm high. I'm fighting good.
It relaxes you when you're sparring. It takes that little. See, I like it before I go on stage. Before I go on stage, the feeling you get, it all lives in your stomach. Everything that you own, everything that you've
done. Yeah, when I was on stage, I couldn't go on the sober. I couldn't go on stage without smoking.
All right, let me ask you this off the fucking cuff here. I watched Tyson. I watched you go do a one-man show on, I think it came out on HBO.
Yes.
I sat there going, look at this motherfucker. Look at this man. What he's done. But then I go, to him, this is dick. Because he's beating people up in front of 18, 50,000 people with a million people watching you on pay-per-view. What's the difference of what? I mean, you went up there like you have been doing stand-up for 20 years.
It's different. It's different. Know why? It's too fucking intimate. You know, it's too intimate to either block out. You know, even though something fighting, you can block everything out, but you can still see everything, but everything's blocked out. You know? But right there, it's just too fucking perfect. You turn around and in your fucking face. So, it was, you know, it was really interesting how I was doing that, you know. But I put it all in the same perspective as fighting.
When you went up on stage,
yeah,
fucking brilliant. Because I've been telling people that ever since I started jiu-jitsu, my stand-up game has gotten way fucking better. I've become a better stand-up. Now I know when to breathe. Now I know when to attack.
Yes.
Yeah, now I know how to beat him up for 3 minutes and backing off.
Being on stage is pretty exhilarating, man. It gives you something of a high. Being on stage.
When you got off stage, what did you feel?
When I got off stage, I felt that I needed to get back on stage.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, where did you rehearse this?
In Vegas. In MGM Grand.
And how many times did you rehearse this a week before you shot it for HBO?
Wow, we did it for a long time. And then they said, let's go to Broadway. First, they took us to Broadway. And then once we did it on Broadway, they said, let's shoot it here. And then we shot it there.
How long was it on Broadway for?
I think we did 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks on Broadway.
And would you switch the stories up every night, or did you stay to a...
Sometimes I'll switch them up.
Because something else pops up.
Yeah. So,
like, sometimes you're in between two stories, and you got the two stories, but there's a bridge between those motherfucking stories that'll make those stories so much motherfucking better.
Changes.
Just one little bridge.
Always changes.
Always changing. And how did you feel when you got off stage? Were you tired? Were you vulnerable?
No, I thought it wasn't long enough. I need to get back on there again. I wanted to be out there. I wanted the people to see me. I wanted them to applaud more and stuff.
And how long would you do? How long was the original?
Listen, I used to do it twice a day. I did it twice a year, but I did it twice a day in some shows.
And who wrote it with you?
My wife wrote it.
No shit. And you just told her the stories.
She told her what happened. First, she said, whoa, I don't want to talk about that. You think you really want people to know that? I said, no, baby, everybody know. If I lie, people out there will say, you're lying, motherfucker. They know. Everybody know what happened. So I had to tell the truth. Everybody knows. No one could come up and say, hey, that's bullshit. Because everybody know that really what happened.
You didn't care like me. I don't give a fuck what gets out. I put it all out there, man.
Everybody knows. I just never, you know, I told everybody before. I just never told nobody on stage like that, but everybody knows.
I was telling Lee yesterday, the other night, to get on stage, and sometimes Lee might feel like I'm bullying him or whatever, but what I'm trying to explain to Lee is the more you go on stage, the more you peel the layers off.
100%.
I can make you go up there and talk shit for every night for a year until one night. You're fucking dying, and all of a sudden, you know, you start talking about, fuck this. Let me tell you what I had when I saw when I was 4. I was walking down the block, and I saw a dude stab another dude. And all of a sudden, the crowd is silent. But all of a sudden, you just took off your shirt. You just put your heart in their hands. And that's a weird... It took me fucking 11 years of comedy to even think of putting prison, drug addiction... The pain I had growing up, finding my mother dead on the fucking floor when I'm going to hit an acid. It took years for me to come up on stage and get the balls to say that because I didn't think it was interesting. I thought that everybody took these lumps
as
a child.
That's what I always thought, too. And I thought everybody kept it. In fact, I thought everybody felt dirty about it. I used to feel dirty before my childhood was that I was poor. I felt real bad about that. It was just really bad. It's like, no, this is never going to turn out good. There's no way I was going to become this guy that I am now. It was just really bad.
For how long didn't you feel it? For how long did it take you to not feel the real Mike Tyson? Like, for me, I was 44 years old when I felt who Joey Diaz was. Jose, like, I've broken this into 3 chapters, Mike. My birth name is Jose Antonio Diaz. That's my motherfucking slave name. That's what they gave me before they put me on this ship. My street name is Coco Diaz. And my name today is Joey Diaz.
Right.
And I've had to, for me to keep going, I've had to break this up into 3 characters to understand who the fuck made me. Do you feel that way? Like at one time you were little Mike, tough Mike.
Dirty Mike.
Dirty Mike. Okay, you were Dirty Mike. And then you became the undisputed champion of the fucking world.
That's a real trip.
Then you became Dirty Crazy Mike.
Now you just became a fool.
Then you became Nasty
Mike. Yeah, a fool, man.
Nasty Mike, West Wind of NWA. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, you were in NWA.
I really say, when I was champ, I really didn't hurt anybody but myself, really. You know, we just had a lot of fun. I bought a lot of cars for people and girls and stuff. And we spend our money on boats and cars, houses, playing, whatever.
And you didn't give a fuck. And
traveled, yeah.
You didn't give a fuck where the next dollar was coming from. You knew it was coming.
It was coming hard.
And if it didn't come, you could still rob it.
No, it wasn't about robbing.
No, no, no. We were in the back of your mind.
25, 30 million a WAP, man. So, you know what I mean? Yeah, we make 90 a year. So we were just going crazy.
$90 million. When did the blow come into this?
I didn't start using blow to 2006 probably.
Oh, okay, that came later. When you were champion, you were champion on everything.
Yeah.
Did you, when you were growing up being Dirty Mike, did you think drugs were gonna be a part of your life or?
None.
When you were hanging out with Cuss. Drugs. It was the farthest thing from your motherfucking life.
When I was hanging out with Cuss, yeah, but drugs always been a part of my life. I stopped. Yeah, my mother was an alcoholic. My father was a drug addict and stuff. Alcoholic, he was a player and stuff. So I always did drugs, but I wanted to do boxing so bad I gave all that stuff up.
And you really respected yourself, and you never thought you'd do drugs again. While you were knocking motherfuckers out at 20.
No, I always said, God, I want to smoke a joint.
Oh, you did at least want to smoke a joint.
I wanted to smoke a joint, but I was drinking like a fish though. So my mind works like this. This is how my mind works at 10, 9, 11, 12, 13, 14. This is how my mind. Listen, I'm not going to do weed and no more drugs. No, why? Because that's illegal. But I'm going to get drunk like a motherfucker. I was an alcoholic my whole career. Oh, man, blazing, fucking full-blown alcoholic.
What about during training camps?
No, I didn't do none of that stuff during my training. But listen, after fights, I'm a monster. Right to the bars.
For how long?
Huh?
How long would you go after
your fight? Until we got a next fight and I start training again.
You were saying something before that was interesting. Here you are going in to get fucking champions and beating people up. Now you have to. I consider when I go up on stage that I'm going up in front of a mirror. And that's why you get those nerves sometimes. You were saying that before you got on stage, your nerves would be out of fucking control and you needed to get blasted. Why?
No, I just have to be. I'm not comfortable enough with myself being sober and performing like that in front of all the people. I have to get stimulated.
What kind of pre-show stimulation did you have?
You know, you shadow box, smoke a little joint like an hour before, 15 minutes, 30 minutes before I get on stage.
And how loose did it make you feel?
Yeah, I'm just ready to go. I'm pretty uninhibited.
When you get off stage after an hour, how long was the 1:15?
Yeah, 1:15.
When you got off, did you feel that night when you get to the hotel, not pain, but a little discomfort in your thighs? Because you were, for me, when I get off stage, and this has just been the last 10 years, when I learned how to become a headliner, when I became a headliner, I was headlining clubs, but I wasn't a motherfucking headliner. There's a big difference. Sometimes my legs feel sore after two shows because I'm gripping my feet like a fucking animal. Into the ground, and I'm letting everything go, and I ain't backing up, bitch. In my mind,
you know, this is why I do this. I didn't mean to interrupt. But
No, go.
This is why I haven't been doing shows for probably a year, because I won't do a show unless I'm in 100% physical shape.
God bless you.
I don't go on stage unless I'm in 100%
why?
Physical shape, huh?
Why?
Because my stage is a lot of energy, it's explosive, I'm doing stuff, I'm jumping all over the place, I'm moving a lot, and, I can't do that. I can't do that right now. My show. I can't do my show right today. I'm burning so much energy. I'll be too tired. I couldn't finish the show.
When I do two shows now, like I do two shows a night, and I fuck by the second night, something, and I work out in the daytime. You know what I'm saying? 20 on the elliptical, 20 minutes away. Tell me, old man, I ain't looking. There's a kickboxing school. I take the hour class and stuff like that. But I do agree with you. When I was 400 pounds and I was going up on stage, when I get off stage, there'd be two puddles under my arm. The cocaine would be sweating from the night before, because I would never do coke before I went on stage.
I'm only got to get. I did coke on stage once and it didn't turn. I didn't like.
No. Shit! Is it fucking bad?
My nose is stuck clogged.
You do like not want to do cocaine.
I'm talking funny through my nose. I didn't like this.
No, I did it one time, St. Patty's Day, 1992. That was the last time I did cocaine before I went on stage. I couldn't even do cocaine at 1 p.m. if I had a show at 8. Now, don't get me wrong. While I was up on stage, you know I had a gram in that drug pocket.
Oh, no.
Because as soon as I get off stage, before I could talk to Mike Tyson or Joey LaBamba or give Lee a hug, I would go, hold on, I got to pee. Because I had to keep that adrenaline going. So I would, as I was peeing, I would do my first 3 bumps. Then I come out and give you a hug, and then I was Joey. That's it. That was how it was for the last 10 years
that's
of my career.
Joe. That's awesome.
I couldn't
hit
do
right.
I had to have it in my pocket. I don't want no problems. If you told me it was on its way, I went up on stage and I would be cracked because I didn't have it. I want it in my pocket. I don't want to do it. Just give it to me. Let me hold it in my pocket. It'll make me feel comfortable. That was the reason why it took me so long to quit cocaine, because I didn't think I'd be funny. But I knew one thing. When I went up on stage coked out, like the night before, like if I had done coke for 2 nights in a row, that next time when I get off stage, I would tell you material, but my soul and my heart wasn't connecting with the material.
Like when I went on stage, I thought everybody knew I was on cocaine.
You did?
Yeah. Everybody knows. I'm going, oh, shit, they know. And they look at me. Like, ah. They know. They don't know. I got bugged out. Yeah.
My God, Mike. So if you had to break down your life, so we're still the Dirty Mike, and who are you today?
Listen, man, I'm a guy that's, just want to establish my relationship with my children now. You know, me and my wife are cool now. We don't beef, no, we don't fight. We work as a team now, but I'm pretty much establishing my relationship with my sons and stuff, letting them know it's all about sacrificing and just, you know, dedicating your life to something that you really want to achieve something in. And then after that, maybe you have to achieve your goals, then you can hang around and party and have fun. But you have to establish yourself first before you even, you know, I couldn't even enjoy myself for when I first understood what sacrifice was and what the prizes was to, from sacrifice. I couldn't imagine not wanting to achieve things in life. I became very very ambitious as a young kid. And I just can't understand at 20, 18, 19 I've established so much in my kids. They don't have that kind of drive. I want them to have that drive and believe in themselves.
What do you think is missing from kids today having that drive at 20? That we had growing up.
Hey,
I didn't stop.
Yeah, well, let me say, I don't know. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe our pampering them. Maybe I think we allowed them to have everything they needed as a young kid, and probably a little bit more. They able to go out the country and travel and go on trips and stuff whenever they want. Maybe that's a little bit too much. But then I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, we love our. I have a daughter and I love it with all my heart, and you put money away, and you do this, and you do that, but...
Yeah, but I have a son that, you know, if he has drug debt, the guy calls his mother and says, well, such and such owes me money for this, and she has to pay him. You know, this kid is the little spoiled kid, and we always make sure he has his apartment and stuff, and he never have to worry about it, or struggle for anything. And no one's ever given me anything but an opportunity, you know? And I'm saying this is probably my fault, you know? You know what I would do to a kid like my kid? If I saw my kid, if I just even saw him walking the street, you know what I would do to him?
What?
Bad stuff.
You don't want your kids on the street at all?
No.
Never to repeat what you did at all?
Not even a little bit.
You made a commitment to that. You said, fuck
yeah,
that.
But sometimes I worry maybe they needed a little struggle in life. You know?
You make them mow the lawn. You make them paint the lawn.
No, they don't do that stuff.
See, that's my mother instilled that in me, even in her fucking, she was a functioning alcoholic, but she wouldn't just give me a 20. Like, if I came to her and said, I want that toy down the block, she would go, all right, sweep the front, take the garbage out, wash the bathroom. Do I got to clean the bathroom? You got to clean the bathroom. Fill up the beer case and ask Pepe if he needs help in the kitchen. It would take me an hour and a half, and she'd throw me a 20. So I knew if I hustled her for a 20, you know what I'm saying? Like, I knew. And that, and I was spoiled till my mother died. And then I had to find the realities of the world.
My mother used to bring her boyfriends over and stuff, and when they go to bed, they get tired. We used to always rob his pockets and shit. The men that came and she brought in the house, he always robbed them when he fell asleep.
Trust me, I robbed a lot of pockets, but they weren't from my mother's. But no, my mother died without. But I used to fuck with my stepfather. I loved my stepfather, but he was a loan shark, and he would hide his money in different places in the house. So when I wanted to fuck with him, I would move his money. I would never steal it from him. I would move his money, and he would never say nothing. He would just go crazy. I would do this to him for fucking weeks. And then something happened between us. I went to work for him selling flowers on 86th Street and Broadway. We would sell gladiolos. And one night, I felt he undercut me. So I started robbing for him. I'd take $100 off the top, and he would have it in rubber bands. And he would always put like a marking on them. And I would lure him downstairs one way or another. I'd make a flyer in the kitchen or something. And while he was turning up, I'd hit him for a $100 bill. And one time, I'll never forget, I was robbing him, and the $100 bill rubber band blew up. And there was hundreds floating, and he caught me. He's like, you motherfucker. It was fucking crazy.
Do you ever notice this when you go around life and your journey in life, you haven't met too many people like yourself?
Oh. No, I think where I came from.
I have a lot to do it. You know, I'm in England or Sweden somewhere, and I'm talking to a young lady. I'm young. I'm like 23 at the time. So I'm talking to a young lady, and she's talking about wonderful things her and her family did. And she said, what did you do when you were a young kid? What were you like? And I said, I used to rob people's houses. I said, I stopped playing. She said, what were you like? I said, that's what I did. I robbed houses and stuff, snatched people's jewelry and purses and stuff.
I was, I didn't get arrested 38 times. But, you know, in that area where I lived, yeah, we had police contact. But they would throw you in the backseat of the car and give you a ride home, yeah, or punch you in the stomach. You know, they would smack you in the face. Cops were different back then. But the worst thing I did at that age, in the eighth grade, people were moving into the house across the street from me, right, Mike? And they had, like, New York license plates. So I knew they had to go back to New York to get their shit. So on the second load, me and my buddies watched them, and I broke into their house and robbed a couple things. But I took the kid's stereo. The kid had a badass Fisher with some fucking Blaupunkt, not Blaupunkt, but Fisher speakers. And the 8-track with the cassette in the thing. I mean, I was living life. It's 75, and I robbed this motherfucker. I'm like 12 or 13. Wow. They come back. They call the police. I got the stereo set up in my bedroom. Guess what happened? I ended up becoming friends with the kid. I would go to his house and eat. Then he would come to my house and eat. And then he wasn't allowed in my bedroom. For 2 years, we were friends, but I never invited him up to. He would always say, how come I never saw your stereo? You don't want to see it. And then they moved back to the Bronx. They were Puerto Rican. They said, fuck New Jersey.
Oh, man, shit. Jersey City, where all the Puerto Ricans at?
Oh, that Puerto Ricans are all over that beautiful fucking city, bro. And now they got Dominicans up and down.
Aren't they beautiful people?
Are beautiful. Beautiful. They fucking, I love that whole area. I'm excited about going back for a few weeks. It's been a long fucking time since 93. Every time I go to New York, it's just for fucking 3 days and I get out of there. And to be back there in April and May, the weather's fucking nice. No humidity yet. That June shit, you could fucking kill your mother in that shit. Right, that June wet. Humidity shit.
Behind the ices, behind the ice, yeah.
You had to sleep with a sheet, sweating. All the windows open, yeah, a fucking fan, on a sheet, naked.
What do you call that stuff?
Piragua.
The iron stuff we come and hang out on, we put our clothes on. The fire escape.
The fire escape, yeah. I think you were talking about the Puerto Rican snow cones. The dude comes with a sheet of ice with a towel on top of it.
Juice on it.
Oh, and they put tamarindo and fucking coconut. Oh, the coconut is the shit.
Cherry too.
Cherry coconut mix. Yeah. You give them an extra quarter and shit.
Remember the ice cream truck with mommy, the ice cream throw down a quarter.
Oh, Mr. Softy.
Nothing like
Softy,
New York, right?
Bro, Mr. Softy came into my life in 1988. And to this day, my favorite Mr. Softy is a double cone, vanilla chocolate with color sprinkles and whipped cream. We've been messing with him
since the 70s, man.
Fuck yeah. I still fuck with Carvel. Anybody who knows me still knows I buy a Carvel cake every year on my birthday. Even if it's just me alone, bitch.
Hey, Joey, I was in my room, my bedroom today watching television, and I was just saying to myself, I was watching Bobby Brown's Every Little Step. He was young, like 19 or something. And I was thinking, wow, this is my era. I said, where did the time go? I got old too fast. What the hell happened?
How fast did it go by,
buddy? It went too fast.
1 minute you were 20.
Yeah, next 1 minute you were
33.
Yeah.
Not even. Like, you wake up and go, I'm 33. Wow, that was 13 years ago. And then you wake up and you're 41, then 48, something else hits you. And I walk around, I look at my daughter at dinner some nights, and I'm like, how the fuck did this happen? 6 years ago, how the fuck did this happen? How many fucking, where did she come from? You know, who brought her into this fucking house?
So sometimes I call friends or something like to get my daughter or get one of my kids or a friend of mine a job, and I forget, God, I can call people to help people get jobs. How do I know these people? You know, but then remember, time goes by so fast. You know, you forget how you met them, you know, but you know they got the job and they can help you. But damn, how did he get into this stuff?
When you were sitting there at Cuss's house at that age of 15, thinking you were going to go to the Olympics and become a champion, did you think about going around the world 8 times like you had?
Yeah.
You were dreaming about
that. About going around the world fighting and stuff with Cuss and stuff.
Dreaming of meeting different great
people and stuff. Cultures. Eating some good Italian foods.
Fucking some women, because I know all that was day. In the back of your mind. Shit. You're a fucking savage.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to go fuck those Indian women up and shit.
Listen, man. No,
I'm fucking that dot right off their head.
No, listen, man. I went on a trip one day with a friend of mine, and yeah, we were for like 3 months off the French Riviera. We started from like Ibiza, Spain, and we ended up the boat there, but we kept going. The boat ended up in the Ukraine. We were just partying from country to country. We were just having a ball. We went to Istanbul for
No, Mecca? That thing where you walk around?
Race car driving.
Oh, shit.
I forgot.
The Grand Prix? Or is that...
You've been to the Monaco 500, too? You've been to Monaco?
I've been to Monaco.
How beautiful is Monaco?
Monaco is very beautiful. You know, it's like a servant. It's like a different kind of country where it takes care of itself. You know what I mean?
Right. Committed to anyone. This.
Yeah.
What countries didn't you go to in your journeys?
All right, let's see where I want to go. I want to go to Iran. I haven't been to Iran. I would like to go to Iran and then Iraq and those countries. I've never been there.
Never?
No, never been to North Korea.
Dubai?
I've been to Dubai.
What'd you think of Dubai?
I love Dubai. Dubai is pretty awesome.
Now, you're vegan.
No, I'm not, but probably now I am, yeah. I'm not vegan.
You didn't grow up a vegan.
Only when I'm losing weight.
Right.
When I'm dying, I become
vegan.
When
you go to these countries, how do you feel about the food? Do you eat it?
I normally eat in American hotels and stay there.
What type of foods do you like? Chinese food?
I love Chinese food. But New York style? I don't eat Chinese food in China.
Okay, I get it. What about, like, you were in Japan various times. What did you think of Japan?
That's not too bad, the food. The food's not too bad. I can eat Japanese food.
What do you feel when you go to a place like Africa?
I first go there, I feel a little apprehensive.
The first time you went?
Yeah.
How old were you the first time you went to Africa?
I was an adult. I was a fighter. I was champ. But I was apprehensive because of all the rumors I've heard about Africa and stuff and all the things that I've heard happen on television. But when I went there, everything was just brilliant. It was beautiful. The people were beautiful.
What kind
I just
of
came back. I came back from Egypt like a week ago.
What kind of rumors did you hear before you went to Africa? What kind of rumors did you hear about the
Africa? Like it's violent and stuff, and the You gotta be careful. I stay in the hotel and not come outside the hotel.
Did you go to Nigeria?
No, I've been to South Africa.
Oh, you've been to South Africa?
I've been to South Africa. I've been to Algeria. And I've been to Egypt. I think somewhere else, but I just don't remember right now.
Now, Nigeria is where the party goes down. That's
Nairobi. That's what I hear. Is that Kenya?
I thought it was Nigeria where they have the most pickpockets. Like, that's the most corrupt place.
Yeah, I hear you get down to
in the fucking in world. Con artists, Nigeria. Yeah. Yes. That's where it all goes down in Nigeria. I was just for it, you know. I didn't know if you had been there. Somebody
never
tried to
been
fuck
there.
With
no,
you.
No. But if you pay me, I'll go anywhere.
You don't give a fuck.
No, I don't care.
You've been to Norway, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys were talking about the different kinds of people you've been in your life.
Yeah.
What is your reception now? Because back then you were heavyweight champ of the world, like the toughest guy ever. And now, like, not that, like, you're still him, but you're also, like,
Older, a
comedy actor. Like, you're funny. Like, you're like a sweetheart now.
The only thing is that's funny is that people who never saw me fight know who I am. From watching The Hangover and doing other things I've just done, you know, outside of boxing, like actors. And so they know me from that, but they never see me box. Their parents have to tell them that I was a boxer before I was an actor or something. They didn't have no idea.
That's crazy.
Is Mike Tyson an actor? No, he's not an actor. He's a boxer. They don't understand.
You know, I watched all your fights. I get out of jail. I'm put in a halfway house. I'm working on a car wash as a host. And I'll never forget, I came up hot for a UA. It was my second one in the halfway house, and I wasn't allowed rec time. So I missed the Buster Douglas fight.
Mm-hmm.
It's like God didn't let me watch.
They didn't want you to watch. They didn't want you to cry, baby.
And the next day, I was fucking like, you know, hey, this was 20 years ago. We could talk about this shit now. You know what I'm saying?
They didn't want you to cry.
Like, the next day was the weirdest thing. Like, God didn't let me watch my main dog fucking do his thing. How crazy is that? That's why I said, you and I have similar lives, Mike, in a lot of ways. But I know. That every 3 years, somebody came into our life that opened our eyes a little more. My wife, this one I met in 2000, you know, I met this white chick, she's from Tennessee. What the fuck does she know where we're from? You know what I'm saying? She watched the motherfucking Sopranos. And one night, you know what this bitch said to me, Mike?
Fell in love with you?
No. I was coked up. And she says something. I fall in love with the motherfuckers that call me up because they see something that nobody else does. You know what this motherfucker said to me one night in the middle of my coke out when we got back? She goes, I've been dating you for 8 months and I can tell that you were raised without a mother. At that time, I had two options. I could have picked her up and thrown her out the fucking window, but I went with option B because she broke me down. Like no other motherfucker broke me down in 8 months. You know, that's why I cherish my wife, because in one sentence, she changed me as a man. How I had to fucking act from now on. I wasn't acting like a person. She said I was missing somebody's love. You ever have somebody say some like shit like
fuck
that?
No. My wife, what did my wife do? My wife just said, we're going to do this. Don't worry, it's going to be all right. We're going to do some movies. We're going to write some plays. We'll be able. I ain't saying no, what I was going to do in my life. So what the fuck am I going to do?
And here you are doing podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, listen.
Making plans to build a fucking stadium.
Listen.
You're sober. You look good.
It comes a lot to do with luck. Trust me. I'm a great believer in luck. Great believer.
I believe in luck, but I also believe that we got to get ourselves to that place to be lucky.
No, I believe the harder you work, the more lucky you are.
You know, that's what you really believe that?
Yeah, I work real hard, and I believe, I believe that's why I get the edge, because I work harder than everyone that was in my life.
I mean, when I went down to your studios and you were showing me all the things you had planned, I'm like, when the fuck is Mike Tyson going to fucking find time to do all these things? I mean, I had no idea about the Egypt trip. I mean, you don't stop moving.
Yeah, so stay alive. I'm the kind of guy.
You're a shark. You're a fucking shark like
moving,
me.
I'm useless.
You work 7 days a week. Do you not?
Even if I complain, let me just go because I'm useless if I don't work.
And when you're not working, you're thinking about the next fucking move.
Yeah, that's a really that can start depression and stuff.
What's that?
Not doing it, being idled.
I'm always thinking about the next move. My mind, I could be looking at you, talking to you. That's why I need that. I smoke that reefer for two reasons. It's the only thing I have from my past. It's a teddy bear from my past when I was Jose Antonio,
mm-hmm.
and it was there when I was Coco, and it's there now when I'm Joey Diaz. You know what I'm saying?
Like, Coco must have been a motherfucker.
Coco was.
Coco was son. That name is Coco.
Coco was a name given to me by my father before he died because of how white my skin was. So they called me the inside of a coconut. I didn't like it for a long time, but I didn't like Jose Antonio either. Jose Antonio was a cunning motherfucker. He didn't do drugs, but he fucked with people's heads at an early age. You know what I'm saying? Jose Antonio was a stone-cold hustler. Jose Antonio was a kid that from the age of 7 to 16, he didn't care about pussy. He cared about how to make money and get out of his mom's grasp. Like, the more I could stay away from my mother and her giving me money, the better we were off. We had an understanding, because if I took a 20 from my mother, I had to take her bullshit. Even though I still took a 20 from her from time to time, I had to take her bullshit. But I wanted to be independently free. I delivered newspapers. I sold flowers on the corner of 86th Street. I robbed trains. I robbed punks and knocked on people's door and sold the punks for $1 apiece. I was a one-man fucking, I need to make money machine. If I went to Chinatown Lee, you want a t-shirt from Chinatown, a Bruce Lee t-shirt? Yeah, it cost $12.50. No, it don't. It cost $9.99. No, that's the shitty one. It cost $12.50. I'll prove it to you. I would make $3.50 on the transaction. I learned how to jump into Converse and jump into dumpsters. And I would have to get the right sizes of the shoes, because you can't pull a 6 and an 8 and try to sell the motherfuckers for the small 13, because they were $21. That was Jose Antonio. Jose Antonio always had to have a 40 in his pocket from the age of 8 to 7. I bought my first 007 knife. Remember 007, that knife? That big fucking knife I bought.
It had 007
on it. 007 on this motherfucker. It was gigantic.
It was big, too.
You couldn't even put it in your pocket.
Like a buck. We like, cutting buck.
Oh, my God. You had to put it in your side pocket. You had to figure out a way how your mom could. No, fuck your sock. It wouldn't fit your sock. It was a Rambo knife. I had one when I was 8. My mother found that knife, and next thing you know, I was in Catholic school getting beat up by nuns. My mother was like, I'm not going to tolerate you having that fucking knife. Well, how old were you the first time you carried a knife?
I was young, 10 probably.
Damn. Nobody would understand these stories, Mike. That's why I was so... You're such a breath of fucking fresh air. Today, you're an ambassador of God. You know that?
Isn't that a trip to think of who you were first? That's all my life consists of, beating somebody.
And today you're an ambassador of God.
My life consists of beating somebody.
Get closer to the microphone.
My life consists of beating somebody every day. If someone says to me, how can I play him? Oh, he's too big. Let me go and get my friend to call them and walk with him and let them rob both of us. And so I wouldn't look like I'm involved. I was always planning stuff.
Look at this motherfucking Jesse Smollett. You know how I knew he lied?
Man.
You know how I knew that punk ass died?
That brother, check out Dig. He just got, they let him go.
Yeah, they just dropped all the charges today.
They dropped all the charges. I don't understand. I have to look at television because I couldn't hear.
But you know how I knew he was bullshitting? Because he had that little faggy cut on his eye.
If me and Mike, been closed.
Yeah, if me and Mike would have jumped him, one of those eyes would have been closed. Busted nose. Broken fucking ribcage.
Teeth missing.
We always kick you when you're down after the mugging, but just God, to make sure.
You know what I mean? That was just amazing that somebody would do that.
That somebody would do that. No, well, like I told you before, it's called a place called Hollywood. People do shit in Hollywood they wouldn't normally do. Who would suck an old man's dick to get in the movie? Only in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You take your dick out in the Bronx, that motherfucker's getting cut off, and then they're going to take it to the blood bank and get whatever they can for it. They'll get $10 an ounce of blood in there and shit.
Get some AIDS.
Only in Hollywood. I was telling Lee last night, I go, Lee, how much would I have to pay you to stand outside a door at NBC and for me to walk out past you with a woman who just ate three Quaaludes and sucked your dick with your wig all fucked up. And I grew up on Cosby, but you got to be honest. What other city would that happen where a cop wouldn't look and go, that woman's been fucked in the ass and she took a couple of sleeping pills? I mean, most of the women that said Cosby robbed her or raped her said inside a trailer. A lot of them said inside a trailer. How many people...
He did it in a trailer?
In the trailer, on the set. How many people did he have to walk past a woman with to know what the fuck was going on? But how much do I have to pay you to turn your head? What, $15 an hour in benefits?
He must have been really going for it, man.
He was going for it, dog. Look at the read those affidavits. He was giving bitches sleeping pills and shit. At first, he would give you something like, you see what the Russians did, what the Chinese did, and what the Cubans did? A bunch of diplomats went to fucking China, and a bunch of diplomats went to Cuba, and they had to leave because of headaches, and now they're suing the government because the Cubans were playing a tuning fork, and the Chinese were playing a tuning fork, and they fucked up with their head, and now the government's saying no, that they have no sufficient evidence that the Chinese and the Cubans are using fucking commies and taking over. That's not the point. The point, I forgot what the fuck the point was. That bong had me going. What was the point, Lee?
They fuck with you, what would you be willing to do for a paycheck?
Yeah, what you're willing to do for a paycheck.
Well, Mike, what is it like, obviously not assaulting people, but when you're at that level, what, like, can you like, explain what it's like to just walk around and, like, go into a store or a restaurant? Like, people will just do whatever they want for it? Like, do they do whatever they want for you, or, like... Like, what is it like being at that level?
I don't know. What did you say something? What do you do? Ask me what somebody did to me before it happened. Before.
Like, I don't know. Like when you walk into an office or something.
No, I'll say this. I'll be in the street. I'm in my car. And I pull up on the corner. I see a girl. And I say, get in the car. I don't know the girl. She gets in the car and she goes to me somewhere. Don't know. It's nice girl to get in the car. She just comes. Don't know her.
That's pretty great. Right,
but
in the car. That is fucking crazy.
It's cool. Listen, my friend, this is crazy. You won't believe it if you didn't see it. If you did not see this, you would not believe it.
Now you could pull up to a girl.
And this girl looks together like she's a nice girl. She wouldn't do nothing stupid like that.
Let me ask you
something. Me and my friend laugh because they can't believe somebody actually did this. You just can't believe. I'm like, get in the car, boom. Don't say where we're going or anything. Hello.
That is fucking nuts. Like I said, OJ was getting bitches after he killed that motherfucker. The next day, he had a pen pal ready to suck his dick.
Sometimes, Charles Manson got some awesome. Got married to a young girl. Yeah, 19, 20-year-old girl.
Yeah, he's got seven bitches on hold. They were killing motherfuckers for him. Mike, when you got out of prison, how did people treat you for a while?
That's interesting.
Or were you back to Iron Mike like nobody fucking gave a fuck? Or were you fucking back with your own head?
A little bit of both. But I was Iron Mike again, but I was pretty cautious. You know, I was Iron Mike. I was pretty cautious, but I was still stupid.
What was going on in your head when you came out that people were looking at you weird?
No, I was bitter. I had a chip on my shoulder.
Angry?
Yeah, I wanted to succeed and fucking say, fuck you, motherfucker.
How long did the anger last for before you realized?
A couple of years. But I'm cool now.
Yeah.
That stuff destroyed me.
That movie they made, Mike. They said they based it off you. The one with Ving Rhames and Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, that bullshit.
Is that bullshit?
Pretty much, yeah.
Nobody challenged you in there?
Nah.
They didn't fly some fucking dude in from fucking Kentucky to try to beat you up and shit? They were saying that I was hearing dumb shit. And then I heard that movie and they were like, this is based on Mike Tyson being in fucking jail. Ving Rhames playing Mike Tyson or some shit. I knew that had to be a by the way there.
Listen, right, if anybody would ever think about them, and them guys would just have me down. They held me down like that.
You had no bad experiences in there?
No, I had, listen, Yeah, I had one of the best times. For that 3 years, that was like kind of like the best time of my life. I had a ball in prison.
No, you didn't.
I had a ball.
Seriously?
Yeah.
In which way?
I had anything I wanted. I had, I got my, she was my, not my teacher, you know, so you go to school in prison. I got my teacher pregnant in prison. I'm serious, I got my teacher pregnant in prison. My friend from Chicago had to drive her to a doctor to get an abortion, but I got pregnant in prison.
So it didn't stop for you when mm-mm. you got locked up.
Mm-mm.
It really is a crazy fucking ride, Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Listen, I still had a little bit of money when I locked up. I didn't have a lot of money, but I still had around $5 million still when I got locked up. So I could still make things happen when I was locked up. I could say, send that money here, send that there to that guard's house,
You were eating good in there?
Yeah, whatever I want. No one to the chow hall. All my food was brought to me from the street. I had a menu. They give me a menu. They said, what do you want to eat tonight? And I say, I don't know, some Chinese food, some fucking, I don't know. Chicken.
Were you
chicken.
Boxing at all there?
No, just running around training, doing exercise, weights and stuff.
And that's when you changed religious faith?
Yeah. But I was Muslim before I went to prison, but people really didn't know that.
Okay. What were you raised?
Catholic.
Fuck those motherfuckers.
Hey, I can't say that because, you know, there's some good Catholics.
There's some good Catholics. No, I listen, I'm Catholic. I'm still Catholic. I just don't go to church and mingle. You know what I'm saying? There's no reason to go to church and mingle with those fucking people if you know.
So what was that like then? Like being king of prison versus like you weren't king of like when you were 15 or 13 in juvie 38 times. Like they didn't do whatever you wanted then.
No, I was a young kid. I didn't have no money and no stuff like that. But I knew everybody in the prison. Like most of the guys from my neighborhood that were locked up, you know? Some guys you used to see from other places like Queens or the Bronx that you meet on 42nd Street. I pretty much knew everybody in my juvenile time being locked up. I knew everybody.
Did you go into a city a lot when you were a young man?
All the time, pickpocket. All the time.
No shit.
Yeah, remember you robbed those perverts and stuff?
Right.
Yeah, on 42nd Street we used to do that too. Say we go with them. Come on, I'll go with you. Me and my friend beat the shit out of them. Take their money.
Those perverts never call the cops.
No, they can't.
Those little pedophiles, when you jump them and lay a beating on them, they can't call the cops. It was funny. With me, I think that the word got out that they were getting beat on. Like the word was definitely out. Don't go over there. The people that are over there sucking your dick, but they'll beat you to death and shit. And the guy who got me finally, that fucked me up, he was waving down the cops. Like, he was there as their savior. Like, I went down there on a bad fucking night. And I tried to suck his dick, and I didn't even follow the route. You're supposed to take him deep a little by the tree.
Yeah, you take him too shallow, people could still see him.
I took him on Boulevard East, and I smacked him on Suicide Bridge. And that was if I would have had him by the dirt, I would have tackled him.
Heard him scream?
Nobody heard him scream. The only person who was screaming was me, Mike Tyson.
Oh.
When he unloaded 50 fucking style Mike Tyson shots to my head. He was one of those aerobic pedophiles and shit. This motherfucker went to the gym and jumped rope with candy in his mouth. And he lit me the fuck up with probably 11 punches. And he knew how to hit Mike. Because he was going up here. He was going, I was covering myself. He was
fucking you up? Oh, man.
He was fucking me up with hooks. The next day, it wasn't my lip that was busted or my nose that was a little fucked up. It's the damage he had done to my head. My head even looked weird. My head looked like Zombo. Let me tell you something. There was a guy down there that sold hot dogs that weighed 500 pounds, and he made fresh lemonade. I was down there 3 times a week eating those dirty dog hot dogs. After that fucking pedophile beat me, I never went back down there again, not even to get a hot dog, because I was scared he was still waiting for me. Yeah, I got jumped. It was a mugging that was a fucking, it backfired on me, Mike. You ever have a mugging backfire on you?
Hey, listen, man, so I don't even want to tell you, man.
Hit me. You got to hit me with one.
You know, I had one mugging when somebody got killed. One of my friends got killed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Mugging go bad.
So the mugger shot one of our friends. Yeah. Like he was like Berkowitz, the crazy Jew that went on the train that time in New York.
Black guy with jewelry on him and stuff, and nobody searched him. It's all the jewelry, and it went for the jewelry. Nobody decided to search this guy and nothing and stuff. When everybody started turning, everybody walked around and turned around. He came out, boom, boom.
I would have shit my fucking pants. My buddies went to get their dick sucked one night in New York, and I was downstairs. I was not a getting my dick sucked the type of guy in buildings and shit. And they went upstairs with these two chicks. They went into a building. I was down there for 45 minutes. I was supposed, while they were getting their dick sucked, I was supposed to go around the corner and cop. It was right when you get off the George Washington Bridge and make a left. It's little Dominicanville back there in those buildings. The cops had that wired down. They knew why you were there. Nobody bothered you. A little bodega on the corner. So if it was me, you, and Mike, Mike's going to get his dick sucked. I'm going to get the drugs. You're going to the six-pack to buy Daily News and a pack of gum, maybe some fucking chicharrones, just to have a reason to be there. And then we'd all meet downstairs. We let the fucking two idiots go upstairs. 45 minutes later, they went to get their dick sucked. Now I got to buzz my way into the building because it's also the drug dealer building and go back upstairs and look for these two idiots. And I finally, something made me go on the roof. The door was open and both these idiots were handcuffed. The chick fucking, they said the story was the chick was sucking one of their dicks. And while she went to suck the other guy's dick, a guy came up on the roof and said, "What do we have here? Get up. I'm a cop." It was a fucking fake sticker. Put him up, handcuffed him, told him he was the cop, took all this shit, and left him there. We had a fucking, I had to go get one of the Dominicans to get a fucking saw.
Oh, no.
We had to fucking open up the handcuffs, and the two guys made me promise never to tell the story. This is the first time I told it. Fuck them. The guy's name was Chicha Bastich and his buddy, and they got their dick sucked over there. And that's why I don't like going. And then another time I went over there, my buddy got his dick sucked, and this time he kidnapped the bitch. We took her back to Jersey and robbed her for $60 and lit her wig on fire.
Oh, man, we used to have a white guy. He wasn't white, but he was Puerto Rican, but he was white. He had blue eyes, blonde hair, and everything. And we used to always just put the jewelry on him and put him in the front of the movie theater up there. It's for people to fuck with him, so we could fuck them up and get in fights.
Where would you hide?
Huh?
Where would you hide?
No, we'd be right here. We'd be right in the front. We'd be right behind him. A couple of rows behind him and stuff. He had a lot of jewelry on and stuff. It's tough fights. they think he's white. They want to rob him.
It's amazing where your mentality goes when you're street. My senior year, I wasn't even in high school. I had already quit, but I was still hanging out with those guys. I was working. And we went to the city. We picked up an 8-ball.
That's how life was. We always was plotting.
Yeah, we're always plotting. I'll never forget that. We went and picked up an 8-ball on 135th in Amsterdam. We went to my buddy's father's jewelry liquor store. It was closed at 10. We broke into it. He had the key and the alarm codes. We took out a bottle of Jack and a case of Nips, the 8-ounce cold beers, and we started drinking them. We went to this bar. We were fucked up, Mike.
When I was a kid, I drank Bacardi. When I was like 10, 11, 12,
14.
I was drinking Bacardi. Bacardi
won. How old were you?
From like 10, 11, 12, 13.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Mike. I started out light with Boone's Farm.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I started out 13.
I started straight with what's that, Gordon's Gin?
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Straight or with a little tonic and a twist of lime?
Fucking straight. And what else? Wild Irish Rose. Remember these?
Remember Wild Irish Rose.
And Thunderbird. Remember that?
I remember it. That should have given you a headache for 8 days.
I used to drink that.
Thunderbird will give you a headache for eight fucking days.
That's cheap ass shit to kill you, man.
That shit will fucking kill you.
Kill you.
What's the word?
Thunderbird.
Thunderbird. You know what I'm saying?
That was really the commercial?
That was the slang on the street.
Oh, okay.
Slang on the street. That was on the street, dog. What up, G? What's the word? Thunderbird. I'm in. I got 50 cents. Mike got a nickel. Lee got a dollar. Let's go. We'll get some potato chips. Go in there, Lee. Tell him, put it on your tab. Remember when you could run a tab at the bodega, dog?
Listen, remember you did this. You come there and you give them a food stamp, right? But they don't give you no change. It's right on the paper. I owe you 70 cents or right. 30 cents. Yeah, and it's good.
That shit would crack me because I would buy food stamps like 30 cents to the dollar.
Oh, you buy people's food stamps?
Bro, yeah. They're junkies. So when they had $60 worth of food stamps, you listen, give them 20.
What you always wanted to rob somebody's food stamp check. Yeah. You can cash it. Back then, it was easy to cash somebody else's check for real. It was so easy back in the 70s.
Dog, my biggest scam was...
You know, 70s, fraud. You didn't even have to have a credit card. Nothing. Your information. You just have the check.
Wow. It's a different time.
It was a different world.
The trip.
Dog, tell him... Chinese restaurants used to go in and they used to imprint the card. Listen, so if you spent over 50, they never rang it in. I'd go to the same Chinese food for a month and eat for free the lunch special. Listen,
rice and gravy, what I used to always get when I was in the street hustling and stuff, I couldn't eat until I go there and I buy some rice and gravy just to eat in a Chinese restaurant.
You know what else I made a lot of money on? You know who I took down single handed?
Tell me about it.
Traveler's checks.
Oh, man, that's tricky.
That's tricky. You got to go to foreign neighborhoods. For me, you got to go to Japville. They have this little Japanese neighborhood. They don't ask questions. You don't tell them no lies. Let's say you got a $50 fucking American Express traveler's check. You buy something for $32, they no ID. Okay. They give you 18 and change. You follow me? So you would just go to Japanville and spend a little bit. They were all in on it because they got the insurance. Nobody gave a fuck. So if I knew you were going on vacation, you said to me, I go, what are you going to do? How much you got? Well, I'm kind of struggling. I only got $1,000. Forget about it. Go to the bank, get me the traveler's checks, bring them to me, call the police, say you got them stolen, file a police report. You go right back to the bank within 1 hour. You get your traveler's checks back, and I'll give you five off the top. So I make 500, you make 500. So what? You catch a little smack to the face. Like Henry Hill says, every once in a while, you got to get a beating sometimes.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
That's so.
That's it. So who gives a fuck?
You got to get a beating.
You got to get a beating somewhere along your life.
I think I know the answer to this, but like, how many days a week, Mike, were you thinking about doing all this stuff? Like, was it every day?
With robbing and stuff?
Yeah.
That was my job.
Jesus.
I get up in the morning to go to school. I go to school, eat breakfast, and then when soon class starts, boom, I go outside and start robbing and stuff. And lunchtime comes. Come back, won't eat lunch. If I didn't get a good thing, if I got a good thing, I'm not eating lunch. I'm gonna go somewhere else in the restaurant, like Red Lobster or somewhere.
Damn.
But other than that, I come to school, I come back to school in the time eating, then I go back out again until 5 o'clock. From 9 to 5. Cause after that it's really not gonna get any more hits unless you run up and rob someone.
Excuse God me. Bless you, look, you're not lying. Let me ask you a question. When your mentality, because I know this, I have to be honest with people, so I'll tell you. There was days when I would wake up from the ages of 17 to 27, and I would wake up and go, I don't know how the day is going to start, and I don't know how it's going to end. What I do know is that I got to come up with $80 because I need money to eat, I got to do laundry, and I got to get a bag of dope. And some way or another, I get 82, or I get 75, and that's when the song from the Stones comes on. You can't always get what you want. But then something happened years later. That mentality went from waking up to how am I going to rob today became I'm waking up, where am I going to get on stage? Did that transference happen for you from robbing to boxing? Did you fall in love so much with boxing that it took you away from that? You had to.
100%.
100%. You went from thinking about... I saw you in an interview one time say that when you stayed with Cuss at night, you would watch fights endlessly, black and white fights endlessly. You studied the... Listen, I have all the utmost respect for all your accomplishments, but my utmost respect for you is that nobody could ever pull one over on you about a fighter. If there's a fighter that existed, good or bad, you know he existed.
I believe so, yeah.
You know the date he fought, who he fought, who was in his fucking corner, how many tickets were sold, and that impresses me to no end with you. When I saw you do that interview, I had just gotten into comedy, and I said, if he was a champion and he studied all those tapes, it's time for me to study tapes of guys that have nothing to do with me, even if I don't like their comedy. Just to see everything that was available to me.
Oh, so that's the best thing to study. I always say that if I'm going to if I'm going to get involved in anything, say it's baseball, boxing, at least record, anything, I'm going to find out who how this first began. I'm going to go to the origin of it, where it first began, and I'm going to know who the players are. And I'm going to know how to play the game. I'm going to know how it failed for him, how it went well for him. And that's how it went.
And you study the fighters, and you studied what they did, what they didn't do, what made them successful, what you're going to do different.
100%.
You know what? Kid Chocolate did this type of training. I'm going to do that type of training.
Listen, I wanted to say something to you about that because I was looking at something about Kid Chocolate. And I was talking to you about he got sick and caught disease. But what he did was bigger than that. He turned people into fighters because Joe Louis wouldn't have been a fighter, Henry Armstrong. They wouldn't have been fighters. They didn't hear how much money he made. They had no intention in mind of becoming a fighter. They were people wanted to play violin. Henry Armstrong was working on the railroad, and he saw in the paper how Kid Chocolate made like $85,000 a night one night. They said, "Fuck this! I want to be a fighter." He inspired so many great fighters. I didn't say that.
What did you like the most about his fighting style?
He's beautiful. A pretty fighter.
Muhammad Ali?
He's different style. The Cubans got different. They move the shoulder, they play, they bounce. Then they hit the difference.
Oh, they hear those bongo players. they hear those bongos
players. Yeah, they look pretty. They're good looking ballet players. You know, they're ballet dancers.
It's amazing that I learned a lot from you, Mike. We're very similar in... Now we smoke weed with three hands. You don't give a fuck, Jack.
No, I like to smoke, yeah.
You love your fucking reefer now, just so nobody fucking gets in your way and there's no misunderstandings. So what's next for Mike Tyson, brother? Fill me in. Fill the church on what's next. Besides being a fucking great inspiration to everybody.
No, really, what I'm doing now, I embarked on my cannabis business, and not necessarily from a flower perspective. You know, we work with flower. We don't necessarily touch it, but from a CBD perspective, you know, from the medicine perspective, from the health perspective, hygienic perspective.
You love CBD oil.
I think it's the miracle oil.
Me too. We're sponsored. We have a sponsor, and I love everything about them. I've tried several people have sent me pounds of shit, and there's an ointment that I really like. I like their ointment, I like their tincture, and I like their gummy bears, you know.
So where I would never have met some of the people, I've gotten become friendly with some of the people, even so if it wasn't from the weed perspective, you know, or from dealing cannabis and stuff, I've met a lot of people.
The fuck is that Liberace calling?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, he's back from the grave. Listen, Mike, I appreciate you coming up here today. I know it's a long route.
No, it's all good, man.
And I appreciate your friendship. Where'd you go eat?
We ate at this time. It was like a Spanish restaurant, wasn't it? It was really awesome.
Oh, they got potato tacos. You should have
had like 9 of them. I'm on a diet right now.
So what do you eat now?
Pretty much egg white and broccoli or spinach sometimes.
That's you your breakfast, egg white with broccoli and spinach?
Not egg whites, yeah.
You got to eat a yolk from time to time, Mike. No, I'm going to tell you what. You got to eat a yolk. That yolk keeps the helmet good, dog.
No, I got to keep, stay down. I'm just one of those guys when I'm on my weight thing, I just boom.
What are you looking to drop?
Probably 40 pounds.
Really? Yeah. What are you walking around at now?
I don't know, probably 260.
You look beautiful, Mike.
Hey, I know, but I want to be healthy.
You just have a physical lately or something?
No, but I just know my body. I know sometimes I'm one of those guys that I get depressed and just say, fuck life, and start eating and say, I hate myself or something. And then I have to suffer and lose the weight.
When you get the cannabis going, are you going to sell cannabis in stores? Will I be able to?
Well, we're
going to
distribute to those people in the stores, and they're going to sell the cannabis.
Sell the cannabis. Yeah. And what's it going to be called? Tyson's Knockout?
That could be some of them as well, yeah.
I want you to get me...
K.O. Kush and all that stuff.
Yeah, I want you to get me like a 29% called Coco's Debt. You smoke this shit, you ain't coming back,
I like
bitch.
That. I like that.
And I'll talk Coco's Debt. You know what I'm saying? The return of Coco.
The cushion. Concussions from Coco.
The concussions from Coco. Mike, the best thing about you, man, I tell you what, I've done a lot of podcasts from Joe to whatever. More questions everywhere I've gone the last 3 weeks. People have asked me what type of person you are. I'm going to tell them.
Really? Right, holy moly.
You're a champion in and out of the ring. And what you're doing for people, you smile. You know, Tom Segura wrote a bit about you meeting you on an airplane. It's on Netflix. You're just that type of motherfucker God put on this planet.
But we are, we street people, Joe. That's what we
I know
are.
That. I know. That's people. It. That's all I keep it. I revisit the street every day.
Look how much money we get, how much fame, you're street people.
I don't give a fuck. I got a Subaru. Nobody needs to know nothing. They could all suck my dick and call me shorty. I was born in 1940. Mike, just break that fucking bottle.
That was colorful.
Jesus Christ almighty, Mike. I love
1940,
you.
1940, shorty from 1940.
We ain't fucking around. That's an old Bronx one there from Tremont Avenue over where with the Royal Javelins used to run and shit. What was the name of your first gang?
Jolly Stompers.
Jolly fucking Stompers.
Yeah.
What was your insignia?
I don't know what the fuck it was. Some kind of bullshit. We used to carry, I don't know, the flag. We were doing crazy shit.
Mike Tyson, I will either see you on your podcast or I'll see you here.
I would love
again.
That, man. This is really
whenever
awesome.
Whenever you want me, I'll be down. I'll go down there and fucking rock with you for an hour or two.
You got to come to our next fair, our next concert.
When is the next concert?
October.
Where at?
It's going to be in Palm Springs, Desert Springs area.
What's it going to be called?
Desert Hot Springs area. It's going to be the Kind Festival. Tyson Ranch presents the Kind Festival.
You're going to have a comedy show?
We can make a comedy show.
Let's
there.
Talk.
We have music and stuff.
Let's talk. Let's do a separate tent.
We got 410 acres.
Oh, fuck. We got a lot of people there.
Yeah.
Then you just got to get some bathrooms. People got to shit outside.
We got a lot
outside.
Of bathrooms.
If not, it's going to be like Woodstock.
We're going to get a country. We're going to get some coffee shop. You may get, what's the coffee stuff again? Magic Johnson was behind. I forgot the name. Starbucks. We're going to probably try to work and get Starbucks out there.
Like, I wish you all the luck in the world. You're
man,
a gentleman.
Man, I'm just very grateful.
And you give a lot of love.
I'm grateful that life has turned out good for me. You know?
Yeah, I'm really happy it has too, man. Like, you got more lives than a motherfucking cat. But you're always welcome here, right,
thank
brother?
You.
Have
thank
a great day. Stay black.
All day,
and
every
most
day.
Important, stay beautiful. And if you see Jesse Smollett, bitch, slap that
no, I can't do that. That's going to put me back in the cell.
Nah, he'll take the bit slap from you. He knows he got it coming and shit.
Oh, I love it.
I love you, Mike Tyson. Thank you very much for coming on the church today. I want to give Mike a shout out for stopping by there, the champ of champs. I want to give Christ Killer a shout out. Always showing up and shit with his little bald head doing no fucking Fidel beard. But most importantly, I want to thank you guys. Remember, next weekend, I'm in Pittsburgh, only Thursday night, 10 o'clock, tickets left. And the 19th in Minneapolis at the Fitzgerald Theater. And 420, the first show's already sold out, so get your tickets, because they're going to go fast, too, at the Pabst Blue Ribbon Theater. I'd like to thank our sponsors today. I want to start with ZipRecruiter, because hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/church. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes. It's a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy and only have to go to one place and one place only. That's ZipRecruiter.com. Why? They send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With the powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates for you so you never miss a great match. That means saving you time. Time is money. ZipRecruiter is so effective. You ready for this one? That 80% of the employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. One day. Do me a favor, right? Right now, the church listeners can go to ZipRecruiter and try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/church. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/church. C-H-U-R-C-H. ZipRecruiter.com/church. The church is brought to you by Four Hymns. Listen, why do you guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when you could turn to medicine and science? Maybe you found that ball spot. Maybe your hairline's starting to recede. Maybe you want to do something about it. Well, 4hymns.com is one-stop shopping for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Listen, I'm losing my hair right now, but I'm 56. But if I was 30 and I noticed something, I'd get on 4hymns.com right now. The plumbing's working fine. But as far as you young guys, the plumbing's starting to deteriorate. Listen, knock it off. No more awkward in-person doctor visits or long pharmacy lines, all right? 4HIMS connects you with real doctors online. Real doctors who can save you hours, completely confidential and discreet. What you do is you answer a few questions, the doctor reviews it, and if you determine, and they determine what's right for you, they can prescribe a medication to treat hair loss that is shipped directly to your door. Nobody knows about nothing. Get the hair loss treatment everybody's talking about. I mean, this is featured in GQ, Men's Health, Esquire, Playboy, just to get the party started, just to name a few. What I'm going to do right now is this. I'm giving you a solid. Order now, today, and the church family can get started with a 4HIMS complete hair kit for just $5. This would cost you thousands. I'm talking about $5 while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. Restrictions apply, but you got to see the website for details. Like I said, this could cost you hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. Save time. Go to 4HIMS.com/Joey. Again, that's FORHIMS.com/Joey. They're going to take good care of you. Tell me Uncle Joey sent you, right? And last but not least, one of my favorite products that I've encountered in the last couple of years. You know why? Because it works. I'm 56. I try to work out. I do a couple drops every night. I sleep like a baby. I wake up the next morning refreshed. And that's CBDLion.com. Because listen, picking a reliable CBD company is a pain in the fucking ass. No more with CBDLion.com. They make CBD products from start to finish. And CBD Lion has you covered. Whether you want to vape, whether you want to do the cartridges, whether you want to shatter. Oh, you're not into smoking? Fuck that. They got gummy bears that are delicious. And a tincture, that's the fucking die for. You put it under your tongue, you move it around for 30 seconds, and bam! Let me tell you something. You do two of those a day, you can do whatever the fuck you want like a savage. Plus, their products are clean, Bobby. And they aren't like the takes that these that they fucking with the false advertisements and whatnot. CBD Lion is the source for CBD. Go to CBDLion.com right now and check out their third-party lab results. You're going to fucking fall off your chair. I mean, when I got the brochure and I went through it, these people fucking care. They really care. They'll break it down for you, what you need, what it controls, what it attacks. CBDLion.com. Right now, the church family gets 20% off. Use church at checkout, all right? That's it, and that's that. Have a great motherfucking weekend, and remember, Uncle Joey loves you, all right? Stay black. Kick this fucking meal.